Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the HPE Quick Tips Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Charlie Rizzuto. The name of the show is the HPE Quick Tips Podcast. I know that. You know that. I know that you know that, and you know that I know that. But today, we're going to break the mold a little bit. We're going to take a different path today. Today's tip isn't really a tip at all, and it's definitely not quick. Today's episode is part one of a two-part series where we're going to unpack the current state of youth sports. And I'm super excited to bring to you a panel of guests that come from a variety of different perspectives in relation to youth sports. We have an author who essentially wrote the book on youth sports. We have a college professor. We have a college coach. We have a high school coach. And we have a father of two children who are currently playing youth sports. Now, every panelist has their specific area of expertise, so to say, but obviously they all have different investments in youth sports. You know, there's not just one parent, you know, there's multiple. I think all of them actually have children, and there's not just a few coaches. They've all coached in some capacity, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm really, really excited about today's episode. I mean, I get excited about all the episodes because we're sharing and we're trying to build the profession, but I feel like this conversation is really important. I feel like if you're listening to the show right now, which you obviously are, I feel really confident making two assumptions. First, you have some sort of investment in youth sports. No matter what that investment is, and it's probably different for each listener, but you are in some way, shape, or form invested in youth sports. And number two, you probably have some concerns with what's occurring sometimes, some places right now in youth sports. And today's conversation is going to start to unpack a lot of what's occurring in the youth sports culture today. We're going to talk about parents. We're going to talk about specialization. We're going to talk about the AAU scene. We're going to talk about coaches. We're going to talk about the lack of coaching. We're going to talk about a lot of different things in today's episode. And if you have any feedback, please do not hesitate to let me know. I'm going to give you all the different ways that you could contact me when this episode is over. But without further ado, I bring to you part one of the state of youth sports. All right, we're here with our panel of experts in the field of youth sports that are going to share their perspectives in relation to the experiences that kids have as they play youth sports today. It's a really big conversation. You hear it all the time. You see it on Facebook. There's other podcast episodes out there that talk about the youth sports experience right now for kids, and is it really feeding our kids in the way that it needs that they need to be fed? We have a great panel here to share some of their perspectives and some of their experiences and some of their opinions in relation to the youth sports culture right now in our society. And I'm going to let them introduce themselves and give you a little background so you could understand the perspective that they're going to come from for the rest of this episode. So, John, why don't you start us off?
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening. My name is John O'Sullivan. I'm the founder of an organization called the Change in the Game Project. Started that about 4 years ago after coaching and playing mostly soccer, high school, college, and pro level as a player, and youth high school and college level as a coach. And now spend my days writing and running my own podcast and researching everything Charlie's talking about, making the youth sports experience a better one for kids, for parents, and better educating our coaches as well. So thanks for having me on.
No problem, John. Thanks for being here. We also have from Adelphi University, Dr. Whitley.
Hi, how are you doing? So I guess my background is that I played a lot of different sports growing up, but specifically played basketball at the college level and coached at the college level as well. And then ended up going to get my master's and my PhD specifically in sports psychology. And now I'm an assistant professor at Adelphi University, both in Long Island and in Manhattan. And I oversee our specialization in sport-based youth development, which is for graduate students at Adelphi.
All right. One of our varsity coaches at the high school level on the panel is Justin Shepherd.
Hi, thanks, Charlie. I'm currently a varsity assistant coach at Harbor Fields High School on Long Island. I'm also an English teacher at Walt Whitman High School. I played club ball down at the University of Delaware. I've coached on the youth level, the middle school level, the JV level, and now the varsity level. I have a 2-year-old daughter at home, so youth sports and everything that concerns it is of, you know, major concern and interest to me going into the future, raising a young daughter. And I'm just happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, Justin, thanks for being here. We have another varsity coach on the panel that also has the perspective of being a parent that has 2 children currently engaging in playing youth sports, and that is Chris Taylor. Chris?
Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me, Charlie. I am a high school physical education teacher at Huntington High School. I've been coaching high school athletics for 22 years. I am now presently coaching football at St. Anthony's High School. And I also have a freshman in high school and a 8th-grade daughter in junior high that have been involved in youth athletics, where I was also involved coaching at the youth level also and watching their experiences grow from the time they were in 2nd, 3rd-grade clinics up until team sports in junior high and high school.
All right. Thanks, Chris. And our college coach on the panel is Rob Cornetta. Rob? Rob, just unmute your microphone.
I apologize about that. Thank you for having me, Charlie. Currently, I'm an assistant coach at Pace University. You know, I coach lacrosse. I've coached at a lot of different levels, JV, guys and girls lacrosse, college lacrosse, youth lacrosse, a lot of different age groups. Actually, my background is I do have a graduate degree to teach adolescent education. And at one point, I thought I was going to go more into that route. And I have a 4-month-old daughter, so the youth sports is going to be very prevalent in my life in the next few years. But I'm coming more from a perspective of just dealing with a lot of kids coming out of high school who want to play college sports and kind of the experiences that I hear from them at the high school and the youth levels and what I see at the youth level today. So thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, Rob. I just, again, want to thank everybody for being on. And John has to leave. He'll probably have to leave our conversation before we're done because, you know, he's a very busy guy with the Changing the Game project and he has some other responsibilities that he has to go take care of. So I want to jump right into it. And John, if you don't mind, since you have to get out of here, maybe you could kick us off with the conversation. What I want to throw out there is, has youth sports lost its way in any way, shape, or form? And if it has, how so?
Well, I always go back and say, what are the kids telling us? And if 3/4 of them are quitting by the time they're, you know, 12, 13 years old, then they're telling us that it's kind of lost their way. And I have yet to meet any sports scientist, coaching expert, physician, physical therapist, professional trainer who looks at the current sporting environment and goes sport by sport and said, if we were all beamed down from Mars tomorrow and we're going to start, build something from scratch, it would look anything like it does today, right? It just wouldn't. What happens in anything, whether it's, you know, a lot of you work in schools too, you know, you create a system that works and then you build policies and procedures around the system. But as the knowledge and as the science seeps in and says, hey, there's a better way to do this, it butts up against the policies and procedures. And I think right now in sports, we have policies, procedures, businesses, and lots of status quo that's pushing sports one way, but it's not really pushing sports in a way that our kids tell us, hey, this is great. This is what I want to do. Sports has become work. Sports has become way more high stress and high pressure. And really, sports has become an elite track or no track at all. We've lost in-town leagues. We've lost, you know, travel, or we've asked people to travel younger, specialize younger. And, you know, again, the changes can be made. But right now, I think if we go back and ask the kids, is this exactly what you want? They're clearly telling us no.
So, Chris, you have 2 kids. You could either speak on the impact, the positive impact that youth sports has had on both of your children, and that's obviously something we don't want kids to lose, an experience we don't want kids to lose, or have you seen any of that as they've grown up where maybe they've lost interest in a particular sport, maybe because they didn't have a good experience in that sport?
Yes, I've seen it both, and you know, this topic might jump around a little bit, but I've you know, I've been there from when they started clinics in first grade, second grade. And then as soon as it got into games, you know, I saw my son who he just finished his freshman year at St. Anthony's, had a great year in football, wrestling, lacrosse. And I remember watching him walk to the bench and putting his gloves down on the field and just sitting there and walked off and really had no interest in going back to practice. Now that was part of tune because he was probably playing a shift or two, and you know, it was a real winning based coaching atmosphere at that level. And I just think at that age, I just don't think mentally the kids even understand. They know winning and losing, but they really don't understand or grasp what winning or losing is. You know, because as soon as the game's over, I think they move on with their friends or you go with your family or get ice cream or something. And then I saw him on the other side of it. You know, he played for, you know, and we went club late. We didn't get into it very early. And he had an opportunity to go play for a gentleman, George Powers, who was coaching at Nassau at the time. And he had a phenomenal experience in probably with the most demanding coach we've been around, that I've been around also coaching at the high school level. So I've seen both of it. And you know, as you kind of get older, it is a delicate line. And I think, you know, that's where maybe parenting comes into effect as far as, you know, what situation you want to put your kids into. And my daughter, you know, we've also had some experiences that was pretty good. My wife had the opportunity to coach her in, you know, youth lacrosse and soccer also. So she's had a very good experience with the coaches and the travel's been excellent also with her as far as, you know, playing and developing, getting better as kids.
Yeah, well, obviously she had a good experience travel. I'm her coach. I'm just kidding. So, I mean, Rob, Justin, Meredith, I feel like the experience that kids have while they play youth sports is paramount. Like, that's the most important thing. And there's a lot of ways that we could dissect that word in terms of the experience that they have. What should it look like? What should it be? Participation trophies and all of that type of stuff. But what have you seen? What have you observed? I mean, Justin, I saw you unmuted your microphone. Why don't you go?
Okay. Well, going back to the initial concept of the question, the idea of whether or not it's lost its way, I think some of it depends on what exactly the destination is when you think of it. The level of individual play, you know, being a varsity coach now, I think it's improved vastly. The competition has improved vastly. So by the time they reach, let's say that's the penultimate stage for most kids, you know, the majority of kids actually, it's the ultimate stage, but some would want to play on the college level, very few up to the pros. So I wouldn't say it's lost its way, but it definitely, I think, has accelerated to the point of maybe even like a terminal velocity. And getting back to something that John said, it's a high pressure environment at a very early stage, and maybe a stage, and Chris built on this as well, maybe a stage that's perhaps too early for the kids to psychologically handle it, let alone physically, emotionally. And I'm sure we'll get into some of the aspects of like parenting. And I see in the worst and most extreme cases, you run into the notion of, in that pressure cooker of an environment, you run into the notion of a sort of like conditional love or a feeling in the athlete that the acceptance at home, the standing at home, is in some ways contingent upon performance. So just to get back, I don't know if it's lost its way if the ultimate goal is to improve the quality of play competitively or improve the level of individual play. But there's definitely a huge piece missing as far as building and cultivating the whole child, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and just you brought up a really important point that I want to get back to, but I'd like to hear from Meredith and then Rob to chime in on this too.
Yeah, I was just about to jump in. Just thinking about the holistic development of youth, right? And so I think that if we consider the overarching purpose of sport, you know, I think part of that is the holistic development of young people who are taking part. And I think that one of my biggest concerns and frustrations with youth sport today is oftentimes, you know, I'm working with a lot of different organizations and programs who are really trying to cultivate youth sport environments to develop youth holistically. And so it's these sport-based youth development programs, and they take that approach. But very often that's perceived as only being appropriate for environments where competition isn't part of it, right? And so in the recreational space or the after school programming or community-based organizations, that's where it's appropriate for sport to really focus on the youth development component. But if we get into the competitive sport, oftentimes you see that that becomes secondary or really not on the table at all. Missing this wonderful opportunity, you know, competition when done right is this incredible opportunity to learn, right? And so you're learning how to win, you're learning how to lose, you're learning all these wonderful opportunities on a playing field where it matters and youth are completely engaged and invested and care so much about improving and learning and doing well. A wonderful opportunity to use that youth development purposes as well. And so I think one of my biggest critiques of youth sport today is just the feeling that the youth development piece can sometimes be left behind when competition becomes the priority. And I think that they can go hand in hand, and oftentimes they're best hand in hand.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Rob?
I just, you know, I think that, and I'm speaking, you know, strictly from experiences with lacrosse, but I really do think that the development is lost. And Charlie, you could speak to this. You know, we're pretty close in age, but you know, I'm just thinking back to my experiences. You know, I was 10 years old. My dad came home and said that, you know, I heard you get a scholarship, you play lacrosse, you're gonna go play lacrosse. And I did that. And at the time, you know, the travel lacrosse, you know, programs hadn't really developed yet. You know, so it was you played PAL. You know, you played one game a week, it was practice, you know, you went to some skill camps and it was fun and you learned the game. And, you know, I think the focus was on youth development, whereas now, you know, I'm not sure that's the case anymore. And if you look at what's going on at the high school level with, you know, college recruiting and kids wanting to play in college, and I think that's very prevalent with a sport like lacrosse, but I think it's trickled down to the youth. To the young kids, you know, whether it's middle school or elementary school age kids, where, you know, practicing and, you know, learning the game and skills have fallen by the wayside, and it's all the focus is on tournaments. So, you know, whereas 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you had kids going to skill camp, you know, for a week in the summer, and they were learning lacrosse and, you know, they were practicing and learning skills and having a good time, and then coming home from that camp and doing something else. You know, now you're seeing kids that are focusing completely on one sport, and they're just playing games, and they're playing games without the coaching to kind of correct bad habits. They're just playing these games that are reinforcing bad habits. And I think the focus is too much on the result and not so much the process. And I think that it comes from coaches, it comes to parents, where everyone's just worried about their kid playing games and being seen and getting in the best program possible, and the actual development and kids learning skills has completely been lost. And, you know, I think for a young kid, you know, who may not develop physically or may struggle, you know, they might get left behind early and then they might say, hey, this isn't for me, I'm not having fun. Whereas a kid who may not have developed physically 20 years ago could practice and play and could be in an environment where it's not solely focused on competition. They're focused on actually learning the game and developing skills. And, you know, I think that's my biggest critique with lacrosse. And you see it with kids, you know, in middle school and high school, that they're not doing other sports to only focus on playing lacrosse. And it's, you know, it's kind of upsetting to hear, because I think you lose a little bit, you know, when kids can't be kids, when you talk to a kid who's 15 years old, 16 years old, and they're like, I'm going to 9 tournaments this summer. You know, what good is that? If you go to 9 tournaments and you only practice once a week, you know, how much can you really be learning there? So that's my take on what's going on, you know, like I said, lacrosse specific.
Yeah, Rob, I agree with everything you just said. I will throw one caution out there quickly, and we're all just speaking from our experiences and our observations. So I can tell you that there might be a little catch 22, even in what you just said. I mean, the travel program that I coach for, we focus on development, skill development. And again, just speaking for myself as a coach, I focus on, you know, the holistic development of the child, you know, socially as part of the team, etc. So that is definitely there. I mean, we focus on skills a lot, and there's different opportunities for skill development even outside of just regular practices. But we also just practice one time a week because we want to let kids be kids. And they are, you know, in whatever grade that they're in, and they're still kids. And practicing 2-3 times a week over the summer for a kid, it is taken away from their opportunities to go and be a kid and go and play other sports and go and hang out with their friends and go and be active in different ways. So, I mean, there's kind of a little catch-22 there too. You know, we're focusing on skill development and saying that that's kind of gone by the wayside, but at the same time we're saying, you know, allowing kids to be kids, and, you know, you could kind of get stuck in a little bit of a gray area. But Justin, while Rob was talking, I saw you unmuted your microphone.
So just real quick, I mean, I agree with everything Rob said, and I think the emphasis on games does exactly what he is saying it does. It reinforces bad habits. And it's definitely changed because, like you said, the skill development when we were coming up was much different. It happened more organically throughout the course of like a practice on every level, even the youth level. But I would argue that skill development hasn't gone away. It's been privatized. That you see a lot more, and again, I'm coming from the lacrosse perspective as well. You see a lot more families investing in personal training, personal skills trainers, where the kid will go out once a week, twice a week, and shoot 100 balls, you know, go after 100 ground balls, whatever it is that he needs to do. So it's more a privatization of that skill development that I think has taken over the more organic types of skill development that were going on, you know, a decade ago, let's say.
Yeah, so I could definitely agree with that. I've seen some of that. I want to stay on topic of development, but kind of get away from skill development. And Dr. Whitley kind of brought it up specifically in the words that she used, and John kind of alluded to it also in what he was saying. But the holistic development of the overall child, are we really allowing our kids to be fed through sport the way they should be, to develop into, you know, even put physical literacy aside, just emotionally healthy, right? Socially healthy, and all of those components. I mean, Dr. Whitley, can you kick us off? And then maybe John, you could chime in.
Yeah, totally. I think that frequently there is the assumption that just simply by participating in sports that you're automatically life skills that can stay with you and be transferred into many other domains, right? And I mean, I've even fallen in that category of thinking about, okay, well, I was a captain, therefore I have these leadership skills, therefore, you know, I should be good in these other areas. But what we found from some of the research I've done and then some of my colleagues' research is that you really, as a coach, as a mentor, as a someone who's leading young people, you really need to conscious and intentional in creating an environment that cultivates people, whether that's in sports, whether that's in music, whether that's in physical education class. I think that very intentional in your practices and thinking about how you're helping the athletes on your team learn a specific sports skill, but along the way, they're also learning a specific life skill. And then just teaching those skills, but we assume that those skills are then transferred into all these other domains. And I can't tell you how many times I've had college athletes sitting in my office telling me that they have no skills as they're going out on job interviews. No skills, and yet they've never thought about and never been taught to practice how to transfer those skills from the sports domain into, you know, their internships, into their current jobs and future job settings, into their schoolwork. And so I think that there needs to be a shift in how we design youth sports, how we train coaches, how parents approach youth sports, and being more intentional in cultivating an environment that fosters youth development and athlete development along the way. I think those go hand in hand.
Yeah, I agree. And John, you talk about that a lot. I've obviously heard you speak before, and I've read your work. So can you talk about that a little bit? Like maybe even the role of the parent, the role of the coach to help those life skills transfer and have, because I've heard that before also, right? You're an athlete, so you should be these things, or you're a captain, so you should be these things. And in my experiences coaching, I've appointed kids captains that didn't want to be a captain. And I've changed the way I choose captains because of that, but that I wasn't doing it my job to aid in the development of that kid when I gave him a responsibility that he or she didn't really want in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, one of the biggest things, and you know, first of all, Chris, wise choice of where you coach. I'm a St. Anthony's grad. And, you know, I went to high school there. And I remember as an athlete then, you know, I graduated high school in 1990, that the athletics were an extension of the educational mission of the school. And the current principal, Brother Gary Cregan, was my history teacher in high school. He hired me for my first coaching job in Raleigh, North Carolina, at a small Catholic high school that only had about 50% capacity filled for enrollment. And he hired another classmate of mine who was a baseball coach and former Penn State football player to come coach football. And he said, we're going to use sport to turn around the culture of this school. And 3 years later, when I left, you know, when I got there, the school was had, you know, capacity for 600 kids. There was about 400 in the hallways. It was just a disaster. And 3 years later, when I left and I moved on to a college coaching job, they were breaking ground on a new school that today has 1,400 kids and a waiting list of a couple thousand. And it was a very intentional, let's create school spirit through sport, but sport has to be an extension of everything we do. So if you take that out of a Catholic high school, this can work on every single club team. Every team should have a value system. Every coach, whether you're coaching 10-year-olds or whether you're coaching 30-year-olds, should have core values. The Golden State Warriors have core values that they talk about every day: joy, mindfulness, accountability, compassion, right? These things are important. Listen to Steve Kerr talk after game. He talks about their values. And so I think coaches and athletes need to come up with a value system. I think clubs should have core values that they say, hey, we teach these things when you sign your kid up. We just happen to do it through lacrosse or through soccer or through basketball or whatever. And then parents should be also engaged in that value system and say, these are our values. What does it mean to be a parent to express these values? And what is, you know, how can we, you know, what do you want your experience to be like as a parent? How can we help as coaches? How can we help as an organization? Now, people cringe and say, oh, you know, I don't talk to parents. I don't email. I don't even make eye contact. And I'm always like, great. How's that working for you? It's not working for you. Right. So this is the way that I run my teams right now. I have a, you know, 12-year-old girls soccer team. It works fantastic. Right. This is the way I do team development with college teams. Right. I have a partner named Dr. Jerry Lynch. Well, actually, I work for him in this realm. He does, you know, values for college teams. He's won 36 NCAA titles. Right. He works with Steve Kerr with the Warriors. So not only does creating values create, as Meredith said, you know, help you develop better people with skills that are actually transferable beyond the field, but more importantly, coaches, it helps you win more, right? A great culture is the key to consistently having a great program. And Chris, you're working for, you know, Rich Reichert at St. Anthony's. There's a guy who for how many years, you know, has been successful in the wins and losses, but I think far more successful in the human development side of things.
I think, you know, I think those are excellent points. And, you know, I think, you know, considering core values at a youth program is really a great way to think. You know, you think about, like you mentioned, the Warriors. You know, I know with Pace, you know, we fall back on and we talk about culture and core values all the time with our program. And I think that's really lost at the youth level for a few different reasons. And to tie in to Meredith's point, you know, I think we focus at parents and coaches and kids, they're just focusing on the result and not the process, which is something I had mentioned before. You know, parents, you know, some parents are focusing on, hey, my kid's going to play a sport because they're going to develop these skills. Or my kid's going to play a sport because he's going to go to college, or she's going to go to college. And I think the coaches kind of do the same thing. Like, we're going to play a sport, you know, youth coaches, we're going to run a team. And the result I'm focused on is we're going to be the best 10-year-old lacrosse team there is. And no one really focuses on the actual process you know, of how are we going to get to that point? How are we going to be the most competitive? How are we going to win games? How are we going to get kids recruited? How are we going to develop these real life applicable skills? And I think to do that, that's where the core values tie in, where it's something that has to be reinforced day in and day out. And, you know, like you said, I'm not sure a lot of youth coaches are doing that. And I think, you know, I think a big reason beyond that is, you know, I think coaching is a difficult profession to get into. And I think the misconception amongst people who don't coach is, oh, I played a sport or I really like a sport, I could be a coach. And, you know, I don't think they realize what goes into planning a practice or managing personalities or, you know, all the day-to-day things that you see outside of just knowing the rules or X's and O's of a game, that I think a lot of people that get involved with coaching youth sports, whether it be a parent or, you know, someone who's out of college and wants to make some extra money on the side, you know, I think there's some inexperience in the coaching ranks, especially at the youth level. And like I said, I think they're focused on the end result and they're not focused on how they're getting there. Where you talk to, like, where you have someone like Steve Kerr or someone who's worked within a highly functioning athletic organization, they understand that, hey, there's a lot that goes into this. And, hey, we really have to stress culture and accountability, and we have to have a mission statement for our team, and we have to have a set of values that we're going to abide by to get this team to function as a cohesive unit and get to the level that we want to get at.
Well, you know, you take a look at, and yes, let's take, for example, and I had my own high school program for 10 years, and you take a look at St. Anthony's, and you're talking about culture of programs and developing kids, and you talk about, like, going through the youth, the thing that really hit me the most was right off the bat, it was win, win, win. And when you take a look at, you know, talking to your high school kids, and you're going in, okay, let's just say you think you can win a championship. When I say we don't even mention winning, and if we do, it's at the very bottom of the list. There's so many things that the parents don't understand, or the youth leagues, the coaches don't understand, that what goes into to winning. You know, doing the right thing, the great athlete, being humble, being good to your teammates, work ethic, school, getting there, you know, just a list of things. And, you know, for the parents, and we talk about the trainers, and they're telling them their kid's great, whatever, maybe they're paying them the money and they want to keep them there, and they think they're going to get to college with the skill set. And that's great, but there's so much more that goes into it for those kids to be successful within a team setting, and then to even carry over to go to college, if that's your goal for your son or daughter. Boy, they really have to, you know how to manage their time, know how to be successful in school, know how to be coached, have a work ethic, because everybody's great when you go to the next level. You know, and the other part of it is, you know, you take a look at your teams. I'm sure we've all had them. You know, I've had kids who were, you know, had no business being on the field. Some were, you know, I had some special ed students that we kept on our team as managers, and they were a part of it. The kids got along with them. They sat with them at the lunch table. They were part of the team. And that's, like, to me, that's a great success for that student there. We had another, let's say the second kids go in, the third string kids go in. And when you can have the best kids on the team or the first stringers, and they're sitting there and they're rooting for those kids out on the field, and they're high-fiving, those kids feel a part of something, which they might never be a part of something again once they leave. It could be the youth level, could be junior high, could be the high school level. So there's a lot of positive things about being on the team. And winning is probably close to the bottom, you know, when you really look at it, you know, from that perspective.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, sometimes winning takes precedent over development, right? Whether you want to talk about skill development or development in any other way. But you really can do both, right? You could develop kids in terms of socially, emotionally, physically, and win at the same time. And I agree with what Chris just said. When you place that focus on winning, you essentially lose sight of everything else. When you place the focus on everything else, the winning almost becomes a product of the process. And then Rob kind of mentioned the word process before, and I would totally agree with that sentiment. So I guess to kind of shift gears a little bit, but kind of stay on the same track.
Well, one thing, Charlie, you're a high school coach. You've competed for, you know, you're competing for a county championship, Long Island championship each year. How often do you actually talk about that? How often on the day-to-day do you talk about winning a championship? Because I know for us at Pace, you know, it's not something that we talk about. We don't say, hey, our goal is to win the conference. We know that's the goal. We talk about all the little things that go into that. You know, how are we going to do that? How are we, you know, control your attitude, control your effort, control your enthusiasm? And we really focus on the development. And we don't have to, you know, it's not something like we have to, we're not, it's just not something that is on our minds every day. Because we're, like I said, we're very much embedded in the process of what's going on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, Rob. Yeah, no, I agree that that has to take priority over everything else. And it's funny, you mentioned like the little things. This year, my seniors gave me a gift, and it was a ball with, and when they first handed it to me, I thought it was going to have all their names on it, and it didn't. It had all my sayings on it, and the one that was right there front and center was, it's about the little things. And one of my seniors spoke at our awards night. She spoke about all three sports that she played, and she talked about how truly special her lacrosse experience was, and she brought up the little things, and she mentioned the fact that some people may internalize the little things being about, you know, getting your top hand high and your hips down on a ground ball to ensure that you pick it up and we gain possession. And yeah, that's true. And I'm not quoting her right now. I'm just kind of expressing the sentiment to her words, but how you got to focus on and how we put an emphasis on the little things in life, right? So those little things that you do in life to get you to where you want to be, bigger picture. But to kind of come back around and answer your question at the beginning, I feel like with travel programs, so I feel like travel programs are great, right? I coach for one. I love my experience with the kids that I have, and I feel like we have a really good thing going there, and I really, really enjoy those kids. And they get a lot of out of playing with kids outside their school. But I coach at a really small school, and they play, a lot of my kids play for travel programs, and it's really, really hard to not talk about the end result with my kids, because they bring it up so often that I've actually found myself bringing it up more often than I would like to. And you mentioned the word county championship. So we've been a program for 5 years. We've played in four consecutive county championship games. Teams that we compete against, my kids play travel ball with all the time. They Snapchat all the time. They Insta all the time. And they're on all these social medias with them all the time talking about, hey, when we play you. So I found it really difficult, and maybe you guys can help me. I found it really difficult to keep their focus on the little things of that day every single day when they were just talking to somebody who plays at, you know, a neighboring school that were expected to play in the county championship game that year, and we're playing in 2 weeks, and they just had a conversation of when we play you, and you know what I mean? So like, I've tried to come up with really creative ways to keep their focus in the now, but I feel like the relationships that they've built in these travel programs and social media at large and all the conversations that they have with these kids that play for other schools and the expectation, like we saw success right away, right out of the gate. I was lucky in the fact that I had kids that were good at the beginning of the program. And I feel like the expectations of skyrocketed very quickly. So I see, Dr. Whitley, you unmuted your microphone.
Yeah, no, I just want to jump in there because I think that's a really, really challenging to, right, athlete's perspective when they're so focused on the on competition and on winning and on comparison with others. But I think, like, man, what a wonderful opportunity then. Maybe how to shift that focus for the one to do that as well, right? Because you're always going to struggle against and hopefully try to avoid comparing with others and try to focus on your own performance and focus on your own personal development. And so I think that's just one example of many within sports where as coaches and as parents and as people who are involved in the sports world, we have this amazing opportunity to help kids figure out, you know, how do we develop this life skill within sport and then transfer it into them? And so just nodding along as you're talking about that and, you know, thinking about, you know, in my education, just thinking about, okay, well, this is all about goal setting, right? And so this is about, you know, acknowledging that larger goal and that that's there and that's a motivational goal and it's definitely something to keep in mind. But, you know, how do we focus on those little things or how do we focus on the process that was mentioned earlier? And so now we're going to set those individual goals and focus on our individual performance development. And if, you know, we know that long-term goal is there and we're aware of that and that can motivate us every once in a while, if we need to go back to that or we need to have a checkpoint, we can go to that. But in the day-to-day, in the minute-to-minute during practice, you know, how do we remind ourselves of the little things that we need to be doing, hopefully set ourselves up to hopefully reach those larger goals that we have? And so I think that's, you know, an amazing opportunity. Yeah, to do it with, you know, also how do we get them thinking about where that goes from the sport domain?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I'm actually glad that you worded it that way, because I feel like, you know, to get back to Rob asking me specifically how I would go about it, I feel like that's what I do. And it's constantly in the conversations that they're having. I don't feel like you can totally ignore it or try to stop them from bringing it up. I feel like redirecting them back to the now is to the way to go about it. So yeah, we don't ignore it. We don't never bring it up. It comes up organically sometimes at practice and conversation, whatever. But just try to redirect them back to the now. So
yeah, totally.
I think so long as it's organic and it's not like you're not bringing them into the locker room and just, you know, write national championship on the board every day to start practice. But I just think it's, you know, for us, it's, you know, we focus on, hey, how are we going to get better today? How are we going to get better with this workout? How are you going to get better in the class you're going to right now? Like, what are you doing to actively improve yourself each day? Knowing that if you keep doing that and you have more positive days than negative days, you know, it's going to help you get to the common goal, which, you know, if you're playing on a team is ultimately, you know, if you're playing, you know, I should say, I rephrase that. You're playing on, you know, a collegiate team or a high school varsity team, you know, the goal is winning. You want to win games and you want to develop from there. And I think if you do things naturally and, like you said, organically, sorry, that's my dog is barking in the background. I think it helps you achieve, you know, helps you achieve that goal. I might ramble a little bit.
I jump in there, Charlie. Yeah, just piggybacking on that last comment about, you know, when you do talk about winning, like winning the day, and there's so many things you could talk about with school and non-athletics, but also the kids of the day, and you're talking about like the media and the Snapchats and the quick pace that they're on and the attention spans. We go to talking about, you know, our practice plans are so, if I say 10, maybe 15 minutes might be our longest period we do something during a practice, but within those periods, now you start talking about like if the kids are really, you know, harping on that, yeah, we're going to win this weekend. Oh, we're going to beat them. And, you know, da, 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 da. It's, you know, guys, Hey, did you win mesh period today? Hey, did you win your individual period today? Hey, did you win this? Did you win this today? You know, how do we do in our individual periods? You know, you keep focusing on, did you get better in those little periods? Because at the end of the day, that's what's going to get your team better. So, and it kind of takes attention away from, you know, oh, yeah, you know, we're going to beat so-and-so by whatever amount of points, or we're going to win this championship. So it's kind of like, you know, like what was said earlier, it's win the day, win your practice periods, your 5-minute period, 10-minute period, and you know, that's kind of what you focus on too at the end of your practice also, you know, which is,
yeah, I agree.
Wins.
But just to get.
Yeah. So I think, you know, winning is always going to be at the back of everybody's mind, I think, and especially maybe even at the forefront of the kids' minds. So I think it then becomes imperative for the coaches and the adults in the room to kind of shape the narrative, everything you guys are talking about, but we always call it like shaping the narrative. And when they're going to talk about, you know, we're going to win the game, we're going to win the game, we're going to win the game, it becomes sort of like a question thrown back to them where you ask them to reflect, well, what have you done that's going to lead to that result? And you ask them to kind of stop and consider, what are these steps in the process? The words that, you know, Rob has used, Meredith has used, and Chris has used, all the same ideas. What are the steps in the process that have led to, right, that desired goal and that end result? And you get them to kind of like think about it, slow themselves down. You know, that's been effective for me. And I just call it kind of like shaping their narrative and sort of teaching them the language of success. It's not just about the win at the end of the day. It's all those little things that everybody's talking about that will lead to that win. You know, and then we also kind of take opportunities, I think, to show them that it has to be about more than winning. Like, we all have been part of wins that were poor wins, what I would call a poor win, where you kind of like escape. You played very poorly. It was sloppy. The team was kind of coming apart, but you still ended up with the W at the end of the day. And then the inverse of that, you can lose well. You know, so at the end of the day, the wins, the losses become in some ways incidental, or at least secondary and subordinate to what are you doing to get to that desired goal. And even if you don't achieve that desired goal, did you lose well?
Justin, how would you describe losing well? And aside from play, like, let's just take it away from how they play the game. What does losing well look like once there's zeros on the clock?
Controlling the things you can control, I think. Control the amount of effort, limit the mental errors, play with a tremendous amount of like enthusiasm and joy and heart. You know, never break down as a team. You never get, you know, turning on your teammates. So you're controlling the things that you can control and doing the best that you can possibly do as an individual, as a team, as a unit. And then obviously there are factors that are so far beyond your control, like, well, how talented is the team that's lined up again opposite you? You might really, really be working hard and being as diligent and conscientious as you can be, but you just don't come up with, let's say, a key ground ball. But for the most part, you control what you can control. And that's, even if it's a loss at the end, you say, we lost well.
So what about, though, and I guess this question is for everybody, and not just with the players. I'm talking players, coaches, spectators, parents. Your team just lost a tough game, right? So, I mean, Chris, I could bring up this weekend, right? So this past weekend, the travel team that Chris's daughter plays on, we went down to the U.S. Lacrosse National Championships, and we were playing for an opportunity. We're playing in the semifinals, an opportunity to go and play for the championship in this national tournament. And we're up 10-8 with just a few minutes left, and we end up losing the game 11-10. There was a call that went against us that could have went either way, and things of that nature. But that game's over, right? That's a tough loss. And the kids played great, and I told them afterwards how proud I was of them. But coaches, players, parents, / spectators, what does that look like? What does losing well look like once the game's over? Because to me, that's another step away from the physical piece. And we start to talk about those social, emotional, life skills and things of that nature. I feel like as a coach, one of the most important parts of my job is when the game is over, right? The bus ride home and things of that nature, that the conversation I have with my kids once, especially a loss, once it's done, once the game's over. So, I mean, anybody could chime in.
I'll jump in on this one, because I was there to watch it, and not that I get caught up in winning and losing at that level, but it was, you know, a big tournament. The girls were playing well. My daughter was really into it, and it was a tough loss. And it was, you know, the first thing I looked for was, all right, how's she going to handle it? Okay, and I looked right across the field, and I was watching what was happening after the game. And my daughter walks off the field. She's got tears in her eyes. Probably the first time she was, like, invested and really, like, probably the first time ever I saw her bothered by, wow, we lost. And, you know, talking to her after the game was directly affected by the way, you know, Charlie handled the team, you know, and my daughter. And then as a parent, it was, and I really don't talk about too much after the game, or, you know, do you want to talk about it? No. Do you want? And we kind of walked off. I got her a smoothie. We're sitting by herself, and Charlie walked by, and, you know, gave a pat on the head and good job and, you know, gave us some encouragement. And that was kind of it. And you just see, you see the change in your own kids, and you know, she was happy and relieved. And that's a direct reflection on the coaching and what you could do to kids, because that could have gone opposite. You know, we played in a tournament the week before, and I watched one of the teams we played, and I was just like, my jaw dropped at what was being said to some of these kids, and they lost. So you lost the game, and you know, directly were calling out kids on how they played and their effort. And, you know, that's a total – you're walking out with a total zero there. You know, we walked out with a tough loss. We got a third-place medal, and it was like the ride home was – we were ecstatic. You know, it was – that's coaching right there, you know.
Charlie, I think can I add something to that?
I'm sorry, go ahead, Rob.
I think you talk about losing well. You know, I forget who it was, but I was at a coaching convention, and we were listening to someone talk, and he spoke, and he said something that's kind of resonated with me, you know, talking to it. You know, he told the story about he was coaching a team, and they were losing pretty bad. And kind of what he stuck to was preaching to the kids, you know, to, you know, kind of in the competitive vein, to win whatever was left to win, you know, whether it was an individual matchup, you know, for a ground ball, whether it was a one-off, whatever it was, however much time was left in the game, they were going to win whatever was left to win, you know, and it might not end up, you know, maybe the score is out of hand. So the score is off the table. You're not going to make up the score, but you can compete for whatever, you know, is left in that game. And I think that kind of translates really well to life skills and kind of handling adversity and handling situations that might not always be, you know, in your favor. You know, how are you going to handle that? And then I think to the other thing from a coaching standpoint in handling a losses, you know, a coach with far more experience than me, you know, he gave me some good advice, you know, and, you know, after a bad loss, you know, that's not the time to call out kids individually in a locker room. It's not the time to let emotion take over. You know, he's always, the advice that I've gotten is, hey, after a loss like that, you know, we had a bad loss, you know, we didn't play well. You know, he didn't say much in the locker room. He kind of addressed some mistakes that we made as a team, some things we needed to correct, but it wasn't an hour long speech in the locker room. It was brief. And, you know, afterwards I'm like, hey, you know, what's going on? You know, why didn't you say anything else? And he's like, listen, we're going to talk about it. We're going to watch film. We're going to address that. He's like, but I'm not going to have that conversation with my emotions the way they are right now. I'm going to let things process. Cooler heads are going to prevail. And we're going to address the mistakes, but we're going to address them on Monday in film rather than Saturday night in the locker room right now, where I might say something that I might regret, you know, a day from now or a few hours from now or on the bus ride home from now. So I always thought about that. And it's like, you know, that makes a lot of sense, because as a young coach, you know, at halftime or, you know, post game, I've addressed kids, you know, and teams in a way that, you know, looking back, I was like, I could have done that a lot better than I did. I didn't handle that situation well. I probably should have given that some time to kind of settle out. And then you could really talk about correcting things and actually getting some constructive criticism and, you know, utilizing a teachable moment.
Okay, we're going to leave it right there for part one. I hope everybody was paying attention, as there was a lot of great insight shared from our panel, and there's a lot of great insight yet to come from our panel, as part two is going to be released in the next few days. As always, if you want to get in touch with me, you could find me on Twitter at RizzutoEd. You could find me on Voxer, Charlie Rizzuto, user ID RizzutoEd, or you could email me, RizzutoEducation@gmail.com. Before we get out of here, or as we get out of here, I'm going to leave you with a little tease from part two. It's going to be the first question that I ask our panel at the beginning of the next episode. But until then, remember everybody, it is health that is true wealth, not pieces of gold and silver. In your experiences, have youth coaches become an endangered species? Like, are they doing these things? Are they actually coaching kids? Are they actually teaching life skills? Has the line between being demanding when appropriate, and being demeaning, which is never appropriate, become blurred.